This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the evening edition. Lynn and Uma with you. Interesting statements by the Prime Minister. But before we get into that, we have a whole bunch of messages based on our last story about that big UMNO rally in Pera.
That's right. From Ravine, UMNO is making political mistakes despite trying various models, including being more ultra-conservative, as well as working closely with one-time political enemy PAS. They must realise that in Malaysian politics, UMNO needs everyone on board, irrespective of race or religion. If they refuse to accept this reality, then UMNO will remain as opposition. We have Amir, who said, I totally disagree with the Siputeh UMNO rep. How can you not be racist if you condone and continue to support extreme race rhetoric, including lies and fear-mongering? The moderates of UMNO must leave, similar to the way the moderates of PAS left and formed Amana. UMNO is on the path of party degeneration if they choose to go far into the right. This isn't a race or religion issue. They are desperate warlords still trying to cling to power. I was so angry listening to this. He kept saying, the others, we are all Malaysian.
Yeah, it's interesting. Choice of words, the others. Not something you want to use if you're a politician looking to win back support, right? Here's the other thing that's interesting. I don't think it's possible for any party to take Malaysia without the support of the non-Malays. Without the support of Sabah, Sarawak.
Which is as it should be.
Exactly.
Nobody is disputing the fact that we have a majority in this country and that therefore the rights of the majority, you know, will always have a place in the country.
Correct.
They will always need to be taken care of. That is appreciated. That goes without saying. But you cannot discount the fact that Malaysia is made up of many other people.
And also the political reality is that that majority is also split. And so, therefore, UMNO needs to really work out how to play their cards if they're going to have to win non-Malay support, non-Muslim support, the other Bumiputra support, as well as the split Malay majority, right?
Sue on WhatsApp says, I don't agree with the UMNO rep just now. If you want to gauge response from non-Malays regarding the stance taken by the Malays in this country, listen to what the Pakatan Harapan leaders have time and again reassured the Malays regarding the social contract. But the rally demonised DAP as anti-Malay and anti-Islam. It's complete lies. It had strong racial language amounting to seditious remarks aimed at provoking racial intolerance and tension.
Yeah. There you go. Well, you know, our next news story is probably not going to help the situation. Our Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir, had come out and said that they were going to re-look at easy Bumiputra contracts. He says, you know, this is no longer going to be a thing. They are going to study and get the best people for the job. And he doesn't want to develop a race or culture of laziness.
There's also talk of getting rid of Alibaba partnerships.
Yes.
And subcontracting. So basically, the discussion now is whether or not there needs to be such an act, I suppose. Does there need to be, is there enough in the law already to kind of combat this? Or do we need a whole new act against, and I love this phrase, economic saboteurs?
Yeah, I know. It's wonderful, right? But also, Dr. Mahathir had said that the government is actually going to terminate the contracts of Bumiputras who had sold or subcontracted the work to third parties. Because as we know, this is what escalates costs.
Yes.
And it inflates the cost to some ridiculous amount. But this has been a thing that Tun Dr. Mahathir has been on. I mean, a lot of people do blame him for this kind of cronyism, but I guess the rhetoric of not wanting to develop a lazy race has been something that he's been talking about ever since he wrote The Malay Dilemma.
I think there is also some talk about how, because every time there is discussion about, meritocracy versus giving, continuing the way we have been, there is discussion about whether or not this benefits the people who it needs to benefit.
Right.
In other words, the people who need a leg up in terms of business practices, in terms of getting a chance. And I would question whether or not the way contracts have been given out in the past have actually benefited those people. I mean, whenever we talk about helping people who fall, into the B40, for example, Has it actually done that work? I mean, if it did, I don't think we would need to continuously look at the policies.
It's also a very interesting time to say this, because in the past, many prime ministers have said similar things, but of course, they've been held back by the ultra-conservative arm of UMNO, mostly, right, who have made the most noise. Now, in this Malaysia Baru, the Pakatan Harapan government, Dr. Mahathir, I think, has a freer rein, if only because that core support is split down the middle.
That's right. And also because the rhetoric of the party itself is completely different. It has to be.
It has to be, right? So UMNO in itself can play that role of being the conservative, warmongering, race-baiting.
They seem to have embraced that.
Exactly. Meanwhile, within Pakatan Harapan, within PKR, within Parti Peribumi, it feels like maybe they might be on the same page. And PAS doesn't get any contracts, so I don't think they're bothered. Yeah, they're just minding their own business in Kelantan and Terengganu and beating lesbians, apparently.
Yes. Caning.
Caning lesbians, sorry. Let's head over to the phone where we have Ben Sofian, Program Director at the Merdeka Centre, on the line. Ben, thank you so much for joining us on the Evening Edition. Tell us, what are the current gaps in the government procurement process that kind of allows for these Alibaba deals to prosper?
Well, I think currently, as things stand, the perception is that there is an area for political intervention with respect to the procurement of services or contracts when it comes to large-scale contracts or even small ones. And I think the concern is that there is a gap between the procedures that are in place and the actual practices where there's room for human intervention in the processes.
So would you say that a specific act is necessary to address this particular form of corruption?
There are probably existing provisions under the law that calls for the award of contracts or the purchase of services and goods to be done in a transparent and impartial way. I am not sure whether there is a need for another act to prevent wrongdoing there. Perhaps the existing provisions are already there. I'm not a legal expert. I think someone could perhaps weigh in on the subject, someone with far greater knowledge about the details of the current laws and procedures that govern the procurement of services and goods.
So who are the stakeholders here, Ben? I mean, with this law possibly in place, who's most likely to be affected by it?
Well, I think right now, if let's say the government does go ahead to implement such an act that prevents the selling of contracts and so on, then I think the immediate loser would be, you know, non-genuine entrepreneurs, people who broker for contracts and on behalf of other people, perhaps political personalities that benefit from selling influence to enable, you know, non-deserving parties to obtain such contracts. And I think finally it would be companies or individuals that have great connection with politicians, so lobbyists, people like those who, you know, maybe get a finder's fee and brokerage for fixing such deals.
Ben, the public at large would likely see this as a positive move towards creating transparency, but do you think this might ultimately have a negative impact on the government as well as the business community?
I think in and of itself, I think it will boost government's popularity in terms of the overall public perception of how the government is trying to reform the way it does business. I think that it will all add up further to the credibility of the government. And so it will not take away anything from them with respect to popularity and public support. So I think given that they are far more ordinary voters and they are business people, so just by the simple law of numbers, this move should end up giving the government more political capital and buy more goodwill from the public for them to enact and enforce the reforms that they have in mind. However, I think to balance things out, when there is increased regulation and scrutiny over business processes, even though it is meant to improve governance, it may slow down the pace of business, partly because the public now needs to have more oversight over these things. So things will slow down. The pace of getting things approved and so on will slow down. So it might have a small impact in terms of growth rates.
Ben, to get back to the basics of all of this, what was the value of having quotas for Bumiputra contracts? How was this scheme intended to help foster a strong and equal business community among the Bumiputras?
Well, I think the original intent was to give Bumiputra business people a leg up. I think back in the day when all of these quotas were put in place, the general view was Bumiputra entrepreneurs and contractors didn't have sufficient capital in order to win contracts, partly because they were less efficient, they were less financially endowed, and therefore needed some breathing space, given a handicap in order for them to compete and get jobs. And the intention was that over a period of time, the good business people among them would rise and then be able to compete on an even standing with, you know, service and business providers from other ethnic groups. But I think as time has passed, it has become, you know, a way of doing business that these quotas have stayed, and some businesses have thrived by subsisting largely on government contracts. And along the way, some of the more enterprising business people have found out that, you know, they can game the system by fostering good relationship with politicians and, you know, playing the business political nexus game. And so the system became game, and it then becomes a problem because even other deserving Bumiputra entrepreneurs are denied an opportunity to be assisted by such a scheme.
Do you think that these intentions to restructure the NEP along with other policies that the new government is introducing, will they succeed in boosting competitiveness amongst Bumi entrepreneurs?
I think they can. And the reason why I say so is because such an open tender system has already been implemented in Selangor and Penang when they were running the state government. And as it turns out, they have made the playing field more equitable for all the Bumiputra entrepreneurs and contractors. From what I understand, back in the day prior to 2008 in some of those, in those states, only certain groups, you know, have a higher likelihood of winning contracts again and again. But what has transpired after 2008, the opportunity to apply for and gain access to do government jobs from the small-scale contractors, that has been evened out, meaning leveled up. And most people at least get an opportunity to compete and get an opportunity to win such contracts. So what's happened is it has kind of democratized the government procurement system, and more people get an opportunity to get jobs and get the contracts. So I think if you look at that being transposed on a broader national canvas, then certainly it opens up opportunities for the Bumiputra business community to be orientated to compete first among themselves, and then at a later stage, such restrictions and special exclusions will then be removed, and then they can compete in an open market level.
So, Ben, what you're saying is that to move towards a purely merit-based system, reducing the dependence on affirmative action would have to happen in stages.
Correct, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, you know, even after 30, 40 years, there's this need for different arenas, for different business players, even by ethnicity, which is quite sad. But I think if, let's say, the new government has the political will, I think it can implement this and put a time frame on how long such a measure should be. So if we can set it up in such a way that people then become acclimatized to the need that eventually they have to compete in the open market, then I think people will strive to go there. But as they move towards that end goal, the other parts of government also needs to come on stream, be on the same page. And this includes, you know, the regulatory systems, the legal bodies, and the agencies that commission the work themselves, the agencies or the government ministries that procure the work or the goods themselves.
As we know, the previous government had in the past tried to restructure the existing policies, but that, of course, proved to be extremely unpopular. What would you say were their failures then, and what can be done differently this time around?
Well, I mean, it's quite interesting because part of these proposals were part of the new economic model mooted by Najib back in 2009, and he had actually mooted to liberalize the sector and try to reduce the affirmative action policies that were already in place. But interestingly enough, during that period, the pushback was coming from the Bumiputra Contractor Associations, as well as Malay organizations, you know, like Perkasa, along with eminent personalities like our current Prime Minister. So I think he was part and parcel of the groups that opposed the liberalization moves that was done back in the day, you know, but perhaps the politics then and the rationale given then is different than what we are looking at today. But I think the good news is that now that, you know, Dr. Mahathir is back in power and fully in charge, I think he does see the need for reform and the need to push the Malay commercial community to reevaluate its value systems and look to themselves to try and address its weaknesses. And I think this is an opportune moment. So our hope is that there is the political will that didn't exist in the previous administration, but the political will in the current administration to push these things through and make it see the light of day.
All right, Ben, thank you so much for weighing in on that. That was Program Director of Merdeka Center, Ibrahim Sofian, with his thoughts on the call to introduce new laws to combat the practice of selling Bumiputra contracts to non-Bumi businesses, or the Alibaba schemes. We've got the news coming your way, so don't go anywhere. This is the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.